You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, in Mompos, Bolivar, 5.5 hours south from Cartagena on the Caribbean coast and 12 hours north from Andean Bogota. And this is episode 333 of the Columbia Calling podcast. And later, we'll be talking to Alex Rocha of the Alex Rocha Youth Center in the working class barrio San Francisco of Cartagena. And Alex will be telling us a little bit about how his barrio and how the children there can be helped to get through this pandemic, get through the COVID-19 pandemic that is really creating havoc, well, not only across the world, but certainly now in Colombia. And figures here are continuing to rise day on day, week on week, despite quarantines and pretty harsh quarantines being brought into place in both Bogota and Medellin. And of course, you'll hear more about that on the news segment with Emily Hart. We'd love to hear some feedback on what you think about Emily's reporting and her tone and everything else, giving us this is her second week as the news reporter on Columbia Calling. It'd be really nice to hear back from some of you out there about what you think on her reporting, her subjects, and of course, if it's of interest to you. I know that you've been enjoying previous episodes. They've been incredibly fun and good. We've had, of course, the Darien Gap episode with John McKendrick QC last week, which was very popular. Prior to that, of course, we were talking about news with Manuel Rueda, a Colombian journalist. Prior to that, Jenny Erin Smith talking about the PISA mutation that's creating early onset Alzheimer's there in Antioquia. And of course, Julianne Pacheco and her book, The Ant Hill, Rainbow Nelson, talking about tourism. Nadia Dross talking about the Darien Gap crossing. I mean, we've had some great episodes of late. So because I'm sure you're going to enjoy this episode with Alex Rocha talking about the Barrio San Francisco and the work that he does to try and help at-risk youth in Cartagena from, I guess, being on the wrong side of the tracks. Anyway, this is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, episode 333. I'll leave you now with Emily Hart, and we'll be back later with Alex Rocha from San Francisco, Cartagena. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
I'm Emily Hart, and this is the news for Columbia Calling for the week of July 13th, 2020. Colombia has now reached 150,000 cases of coronavirus, with 5,000 recorded deaths. The peak is expected to arrive in August, and it is predicted that deaths could reach 9,000 within the next 2 weeks. In a bid to avoid health system saturation and possible collapse, the government is scrambling to increase the capacity of intensive care units, bringing in extra ventilators and beds. Many cities are already close to maximum capacity. Bogotá's hospitals are full to 85%, Medellín's to 75%, and Cali's to 90%. Concerns remain about the distribution of specialist medics, who are concentrated in major cities, as well as overwork, burnout, and illness of doctors countrywide. So far, 11 doctors have died from coronavirus in Colombia. Bogotá's mayor, Claudia López, has announced that city districts will be on lockdown, each in turn for 2 weeks, as part of a new regime, which will last until August 23rd. And despite having been held up as an exemplar of coronavirus management and having opened up its economy in recent weeks, Medellín is headed into a second lockdown as cases continue to rise. The economic costs of these measures are high. Colombia now has an unemployment rate of 22%. It's the highest in Latin America and a record high for the country itself. This time last year, the figure was 11%. These measures have had a stronger economic effect on women than on men in Colombia. Women's unemployment has increased disproportionately to that of men, and access to credit has been curbed further. Unable to work, untold numbers both in urban and rural areas are going hungry. This week, lawmakers urged Finance Minister Alberto Carrasquilla to implement an emergency basic income system in order to keep food on Colombia's tables. Colombia's president, Iván Duque, has defied the United Nations Security Council and Colombian Congress in refusing to agree to a ceasefire with guerrilla group, the ELN. In a resolution last week, the Security Council demanded that all member countries immediately cease fire. The ELN themselves supported the idea of a 90-day ceasefire. Colombia's former chief prosecutor, Eduardo Montealegre, has said that he has the evidence to see Álvaro Uribe, president of Colombia, between 2002 and 2010, convicted for two massacres, which constitute crimes against humanity and war crimes. The accusations are that Uribe was complicit in the El Aro and La Granja massacres, which happened while he was governor of the Antioquia province in the late 90s. Uribe is the founder of Colombia's ruling party, the Democratic Center, and sits on Colombia's Senate still. Montealegre plans to take the petition directly to the Supreme Court as soon as it opens. It's currently closed due to the pandemic. Uribe has also lost his own legal case, launched against the creator of Matarife, a documentary series which explores Uribe's complicity in war crimes, massacres, drug trafficking, and corruption. Uribe was attempting to sue Matarife, which means slaughterer, for defamation. The court dismissed the case as inadmissible. Uribe's lawyers say they plan to appeal. That was this week's News Bulletin. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
And we're back. This is Colombia Calling, episode 333. I'm Richard McCall here in Bogota, Colombia. My very special guest is on the sultry Caribbean coast in Cartagena. His name is Alex Rocha. He runs a youth center called the Alex Rocha Youth Center. He's also a guide in Cartagena. But more importantly, he's a resident. He was born and raised and grew up and lives in the barrio of San Francisco. Now, San Francisco is not a barrio that you're going to visit as a tourist. I mean, this is the truth. It's not the colonial center. It's a little bit away from the airport. It's kind of between the airport and the Cerro de la Popa, I would say. And of course, they're having all sorts of issues. But of course, it's an Afro-Colombian, largely Afro-Colombian let's say barrio, and Alex has set up this foundation to help the youth in the area. So it's very good to have him on the show talking about something positive. So welcome on Colombia Calling, Alex.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you. Very happy to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. How is Cartagena right now? What is it? I mean, obviously, it's after midday, it's probably very, very hot, but there's no one in the streets.
Yeah, it's very hot right now, and it's very quiet. You know, this is not a typical day, especially on this holiday.
Yes. One of those things, of course, is Cartagena is noisy. I mean, you know, the coast is noisy. There's picos, you know, there's people shouting. There's street vendors everywhere, you know, trying to sell avocados or fruit or something else. But I guess the virus has everyone at home.
Yes, that's right. Everybody's at home trying to stay away from the virus and not being infected by it and try to save our lives.
But so tell us a little bit about the Barrio San Francisco. So it's the other side of that river that runs alongside, I guess it's kind of like a highway between Crespo from the airport to the old city. How did San Francisco start? Is it like a barrio with workers or I mean, what? Tell us about the San Francisco barrio.
Yeah, San Francisco is basically considered Strato Uno or Stratos One in the city of Cartagena, which is basically the lowest or the income families, you know. Mm-hmm. So we are a large Afro-Colombian population in the community. And it's basically a barrio that was it started out of the need of finding a space to live because Afro-Colombians were displaced from the Chambacu area near the walled city. And then people try to find a place to live. And so we found this area near the hill of La Popa. And this is where we have been. You know, the barrio has been here for about 40, 50 years now.
Okay.
But it still has not developed much, still invisible for the city, still, you know, bad, you know, roads and, you know, lack of good, you know, water or electricity, etc. You know,
I imagine there's no running water then.
The water and rotter is not 100%. We probably 50% of the population gets the rotten water. Mm, yeah.
Not good. And so close to, let's say, the administrative center, and so close to where, let's say, Cartagena makes its money. It's a 10, 15 minute drive, maybe?
15 minutes drive from here to downtown. Very close. Yeah. It's just very close.
And what do most people in San Francisco do for work?
Most people will be in the field of informal economy, which is selling things on the streets, the Basurto market, selling also, fruits and vegetables or fish, or the Wall City, where a lot of vendors are. Mm-hmm. A little bit of a small population of the community will be working on also construction, in a very informal way. All by hand.
No one then is working now. Then there's no vendors.
No, right now everything is locked down. Everybody is at home. The police is out there always controlling everything, make sure nobody's outside. A little bit of police abuse to in terms of trying to keep people in their homes.
Yeah, I don't want to say too much about it, but we all know. I mean, you've been here in Colombia long enough. We know that it's usually best to avoid the police, let's say. So no one's working. The situation is pretty terrible. How do people get food? What are they doing to eat?
Well, the government is supplying some kind of sharing food with the community, but it's not enough. Definitely not enough. And we're struggling.
Yeah.
One good thing about Cartagena is that the market, this Mercado Basurto, is very close to our community. Mm-hmm. And when there is an opportunity for you to come out, because you're allowed to go out one time a week, mm-hmm. According to the ending of your ID number. So you mm-hmm. are allowed to go one time a week, and that's when you try to go to Basurto and find the cheapest food possible, the lowest price possible, and get something to bring home. But it's hard, because there is so many people out there with so little.
In Bogota, for example, it's not getting, it's bad in a lot of places, but what we are seeing is an increase in robbery, people stealing, muggings. It's just an increase. It's not massive, but the desperation is there. People need the money to be able to get some food. Are things deteriorating there? Are they getting worse?
Actually, yes, they are. People out there, trying to make money, anyhow. And what they do, is committing crimes. Mm-hmm. Actually, we have a lot of crimes during the pandemic because people don't have nothing to eat. Mm-hmm. So they go out there to these middle-class neighborhoods and try to steal something and bring something home.
Terrible. It's terrible. And San Francisco and the southwest of Cartagena have been the most affected by the pandemic.
Definitely. That's okay. Right.
So, first, it goes without saying, Alex, please stay safe. Please stay inside. Please, look after yourself, because this is going to, it's getting worse. I mean, you look at what's going on in Atlantico and Barranquilla, it's getting worse.
Oh, wow. Yes, it is. It is definitely.
So how are you running the foundation now, the Alex Rocha Youth Center? How are you running this during a pandemic?
Right. Well, we stopped the activities to 95%. We still do something here, something there. And the good thing about what I'm doing is that because I am a tour guide, I have met people whom I have become friends with. Yeah. And people sometimes send, to Western Union a little bit of help. And so I'll be able to collect some money, buy food, and share with the community. Because we have about 65 children in different programs. We have English lessons. I'm an English teacher and a tour guide, so we teach English for free. I got 6 children myself. They are from 18 to 28, and so they are all involved in the program. It's 4 boys and 2 girls, so we teach English to the community here. Nice. Also, we do. We have a small soccer team.
Yeah,
we have about 40 children there, and we also have a girls team. And we have a lot of activities of recreational activities, arts, and also reading and to reinforce reading and writing. So right now what we're doing is only sharing food because that's what people need right now more than anything else. You know, so with a little bit of help that I get from people I've met through tourism, you know, I get to share what I get from my friends, especially from the United States and the U.S. and Canada, and the U.K. and Canada. Mm. So we get to share with the community, but it's terrible right now.
Yeah, so just for food right now, but in other days, let's say it would be for when we leave this horrible time, it will be for maintaining the foundation.
Definitely, that's okay. That's right.
Can I add, I mean, where did you learn? I mean, you grew up in San Francisco, which is, as you say, strato uno, working class neighborhood. How did you learn English?
Well, I definitely believe this is a gift. You know, it's something that I learned when I was a teenager. But at the same time, I was exposed to a lot of English music, hip hop. Huh? Breakdance. I'm a breakdancer.
Really?
So, yeah. So I was listening and dancing, you know, doing breakdancing. So I was able to learn by listening to music, by picking up words from friends, you know. And so definitely that was my influence. But then, of course, I was able to take some lessons at Centro Colombo Americano in the city. Yeah. And then after that, I became a teacher actually there too. So I've been using English for 35 years now, you know.
Wow,
so
wonderful.
Yeah.
Because this is not normal, I have to say. It's not, I mean, of course there are the guides downtown, but you know, when you leave those areas, the level of English drops immensely.
It's true. It's true.
You've got all these children and you set up this foundation, you set up the Alex Rocha Youth Center to, I suppose, is keep children from getting into drugs, going on the streets.
Yes, definitely. Go ahead.
What kind of problems are we dealing with here?
Right. I was going to say, we have a lot of issues in the community. You know, San Francisco, because we are an Afro-Colombian community, of course, you know, we have a lot of uneducated people, you know, a lot of illiterate, you know, adults and children that drop off of school early, you know. So we have basically early teenage pregnancy. Okay. We have drug abuse and gang activity, big in the community. I am also a community leader that get involved in the community and try to be an intermediate to, you know, for conflicts, you know, in the community. Mm-hmm. So usually we try to bring peace among the small gangs that we have in the community. So drug abuse, early teenage pregnancy, and gang activity is basically one of the major issues in the community.
Wow. And of course, you know, as I hate to say it, but as an Afro-Colombian community, you're overlooked. The state has no presence.
Definitely. Yeah. You know, this is something that comes from the past because of, you know, the history of Cartagena being a city of, you know, slavery and a history of slavery. So that makes it, you know, bad because we don't get the attention we're supposed to get from the government in terms of assisting the community and providing all, you know, the needs in infrastructure, you know what I mean? Water, education, et cetera. So, yeah.
You know, and you think of all of the money coming in from tourism. It's millions and millions of dollars coming in from tourism.
And the port area and the oil refinery, you know, so much money coming into the city. But of course, we have, you know, we have a very corrupt government. We hope things change with the new administration, but it's been a history of corruption in the government and, you know, stealing from, you know, the state and taking the budget for personal use. It is crazy. It is tremendous.
I just think it's the worst illness in Colombia, of course, affecting us, is the corruption here, because it's at every single level, you know, from the top guy all the way down to, you know, the least important are looking make the fastest amount of money, you know, the most amount of money in the fastest way possible. But I also think that that's a representation of, you know, everyone having been treated so badly for so long that you want to get the money quickly, you know.
That is true. People, you know, don't see opportunities there, And so whenever they have an opportunity to, you know, get something, they do it, they take it. That's how it's been, you know, for many people.
Now, I mean, so let's say we're on the other side of this pandemic. How are you going to reopen the youth center? What are the plans for the future?
Yes, well, basically follow the government, you know, instructions on the protocols of, you know, biosecurity and things like that. So we have waiting, you know, to be certified. And then after we're certified, we'll be opening, you know, little by little, you know, with the a small number of people possibly, you know. So we plan to start, you know, as soon as possible when it reopens. And I'll have all the what the government requires, you know, so that we can definitely reopen.
Do you have your own location, like a building?
Yes, we do. We have a location here. We were able to get a loan and buy a piece of land and build our home and the youth center. So we live here and we have the location for the youth center and we live here in the second floor. So we've been able to,
That's great. But I mean, you know, what I worry about, of course, is the distancing and, the, you know, obviously the biosecurity measures. You won't be able to have as many children.
No. That's one thing that we are worried about because we won't have everybody. So we see how we're going to do this. Because I guess we will try with the most needed, you know, people or children in the community. But, you know, everybody has a need. But it has to be like that, you know, start with a small number as possible and then little by little, you know, bring in more and more.
It's going to be very hard. But I mean, very hard to turn away children. I mean, you know, that's
definitely
emotionally destroying.
Especially because children love to be here. You know, they love this place. You know, we have English class, we have recreation, we have sports, you know, we have you know, music, break dancing, they love it, you know, and especially when you have children that have only, you know, live in a single parent, you know, homes, you know, so they feel like this is home. And, you know, sometimes, they don't have, you know, the care of the father figure. And so a lot of children, you know, like to be around us, you know, my children and my wife. So, we give them a lot of love.
Well, that's it, isn't it? It's a safe place.
It's a safe place
where you can. I mean, if you're talking about teenage pregnancies, gangs, and drugs, this is a safe place for the kids to come and to be out of the way of these problems. And when exactly did you open the foundation? What happened to you that you said I have to open a foundation?
Well, this has come from my own life experience. You know, I was involved in drugs and also gangs. You know, I was a teenager. Yeah, you know, until I was 24, when I had this personal spiritual awakening, you know, by going to church. So things changed for me. And so I had a different mentality. I actually left school at 17 when I was in the eighth grade of high school. I left. And so I went back at 30 years old to finish my high school education. So at age 24, I had a change in my life. By age 30, I saw life differently. And so I started the youth center in 2012 officially. But before that, I was working with the community informally, doing activities here and there until I had the chance to open the youth center when I rented a location. See, working in tourism give you a lot of opportunities in terms of, you know, meeting people out there, getting tips from, you know, visitors, especially Americans, Canadians, and English people. So we will kind of collect the tips and put them into the, you know, the youth center and part of my own salary. So because I also am very requested by many tour companies, you know, I get to work a lot, but I used to. I would get, you know, good, I would say calls from tour companies. So I will have, you know, a 4-hour tour, 5-hour tour. Then I have the rest of the day to do the youth center, you know. So usually I work in the morning until probably 2. And then in the afternoon, I am in charge of the youth center from Monday to Saturday.
Amazing. So tell us a little bit about your past. It's like, how is it that you ended up in a gang or with drug problems? What happened?
Well, this is actually the environment. This is what you grow up with, you know. You grow up with the people, you know, using drugs, fighting, you know, all these issues. So you just get involved easily, you know. That's what you see every day. That's what you get used to. You know, there's nothing else you can go to. You know, that's where you are in the community. I've been here all my life. You know, so that's what you get to see. That's what you get to experience. You know what I mean? So, of course, you know, going out there with the friends and not getting interested in school because school is not an option for you. You want something more interesting. So you're just out there getting in trouble. But of course, music and dancing was a way for me to try to be part of a group that became a gang. You know what I mean? So
you're like a hip hop gang.
Right. You know, because we start, you know, you start battles with, you know, the opposite group. Then, you know, you become fights and fights become, you know, so. And usually you don't like the kids from, you know, the other group and, you know. So that's how, you know, people selling, people are smoking on the corner. People, you know, the older people sending the kids to buy drugs for you. That's how you get involved, you know.
So, yeah. I mean, what I like about this is you've obviously taken your personal experiences to improve the lives.
Right, because I lived that, you know, way of living. So I know, you know, what it takes to, you know, get a child to be involved and also try to keep them away from that, you know. So basically we're trying to keep children from getting into this type of life. Because once you're in there, you try to help, but then, you know, they go too far into the drug, you know, abuse. And, you know, you need a professional help for that. But you try to keep those, you know, from those that, you know, from that thing before you get into it. So which basically trying to prevent children from getting into, you know, all these kind of issues. Okay. And that's, you know, we're working with children from age 6 all the way to 14, you know what I mean? So we're trying to keep them off the streets.
A really, really impressionable ages, very important to work with that, especially they come into that adolescence and pre-adolescence. I can understand that. Now, sometimes, let's say when you are accepting children to come in, can you see the signs that they are, you know, already going, you know, joining gangs?
Yes.
Yeah, because you know.
Definitely, yes. Yeah. You can see the attitude, the way they talk, what you know, the areas they hang out, you know, at and things like that. You can see. But everybody's welcome, you know, because, you know, not all the children are in that risk. But of course, you know, by living in the community, definitely you are at risk. Everybody's welcome. And some children come and go, you know, they all don't, you know, not all of them always stay, you know, in the program. So we have to go get them and bring them back. Yeah, we got all kind of children. We got children that love the classroom. We have others that don't like to be in the classroom. They want to be outside. So we work with those who want to be outside by playing soccer, doing, you know, breakdance events, you know what I mean? Flying kites, especially this time of the year.
So if you do the soccer training, the football training and so on, have you had any famous graduates, anyone who's gone into a major football team?
Not yet. But we do. Not yet. That's right. But we do have some prospects, you know.
Good stuff. I like that, you know. But it was, see, because you always hear about footballers saying, you know, this is where I come from, I'm going to give something back. It would be great, you know. It would be, and so do you do counseling then when you see these, some of the problem children? Do you counsel them? Do you talk to them?
Yes, we do. We have also a psychologist as part of our program. It's a lady that it is a professional that works with us as well. So she definitely is in charge of that.
Very good.
But of course, my own life experiences, and you know, I also, but professionally, we have somebody that is working with us right now. Somebody who saw the work we are doing, and they say, "Wow, you're doing a great job. You need some help?" I say, "Yes, all your help is welcome." Actually, everybody's welcome to help us. You know what I mean? It doesn't mean money. You know, life skills. You know, you have abilities, skills, knowledge that you can share with the kids. You know, if it is art, music, dancing, you know, in poetry, mathematics, whatever, you can share it with the community. Anybody from any part of the world, you can volunteer for an hour, 2 hours, a week, a month, no problem. You know, we are welcome. You know, we welcome any kind of abilities and skills. You know, it's not necessarily money. You know what I mean? So definitely, you know, we are open to all of that.
Excellent. I like to hear that. And tell, you see, because, you know, obviously, I haven't been to Cartagena in a few years. I used to go all the time, because I used to sometimes accompany groups, or, you know, it used to be the easiest way to get to Mompós. Now it's no longer the easiest way. I go other routes through Corozal or Valledupar, so I don't have to go to Cartagena so much. I get overwhelmed by Cartagena now in the old town. There's just so much in there. You know, people asking for money, you know, the guys rapping, people, and because, you know, I'm white. I'm gonna look like a tourist even though I've been here so long. Yeah, it's the truth. You know, and I'll be in shorts and a t-shirt. How are they gonna not know that I'm not a tourist and so on? But I find it very overwhelming, and I always reflect on it, is that really, if you're not working in tourism, the opportunities and the options are very slim. I mean, they get, you know, very small in Cartagena. And now look, there's no tourism. And what, exactly. You know, it's amazing to think, you know?
Everything is closed, you know. I mean, you know, the beach area, Playa Blanca, the whole city, everything. But, you know, something, I can see something positive out of this thing. And what I see is that when this reopens, people are going to be required to have all the protocols of biosecurity, and not everybody's going to be allowed to be there.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, you are, you know, able to. And so that is something that I see that might change the whole system. Mm. You know what I mean? Because right now they're talking about, for example, for the beach, they want to open the beach. They probably open in August. And they said that people need a 10 meter square, you know, space to be, you know, in a tent on the beach.
Yeah.
Well, that's beautiful. You need a lot of space. Mm-hmm. That means, you know, you don't need, and then everybody needs to be qualified and certified. So you're not going to have a lot of vendors like they used to, especially those that are not, you know, certified by the government. Mm-hmm. So it's going to change. A lot of things are going to change.
Yeah.
So hopefully, you know, we don't get to see that chaos as before.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay, well, that's it. I mean, I would never go to a beach in Cartagena, because it's for me, it's not relaxing that every 5 seconds. And I understand the necessity. I understand. You know, you've told us about San Francisco. You've told us about other areas. People need to work. People need to earn. But, you know, you go to the beach, you want to lie down, and, not, you know, then there's one guy selling you CDs, and the next guy selling you, you know, ceviche, and the next guy selling you this. And then the woman comes up, to give you a massage.
Actually, now they also are going to require that those who will be certified on the beach will have, like, a stand.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Yes. So everything's going to change, you know, for the better. And they need to do that, because that's a way for visitors to enjoy their time on the beach and relax, you know what I mean?
Mm.
And so we're really looking forward to that change.
Yeah. No, I see that as being positive, you know, to be able to, you've got an opportunity. And I talked about this actually a few weeks ago on the podcast with a guy called Rainbow Nelson, who has
I know him.
He was talking about that a few weeks ago. We have friends, and he says, you know, we have an opportunity to improve our product. We have an opportunity to get the right people. And, you know,
I used to do tours for him.
Oh, nice. Sorry.
Yes. Yeah.
I was going to ask you, your last name is Rocha. We have Rocha in Mompós as well.
Yes.
You have family in Mompós?
I believe so. I'm not really sure, but I believe so. Yes. Rocha. I'm sorry. I was going to say that Rocha is actually a small town that in the colonial days was influenced by the Rocha background, you know, I would say European background, probably Portuguese or Spanish. So, you know, all of the small towns outside Cartagena were influenced by, you know, all these last names. So I believe it has to do with that.
Yeah, no, we have the best lady who does the forja in Mompós is Glenys Rocha. So
oh, that's maybe my cousin.
Maybe it's your cousin. You never know. It's like, well, next time you're down, you'll have to check out. I'll introduce you to.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Well, listen, how, you know, this is a podcast that goes out internationally, goes around the world, a lot of listeners in the US, Canada, the UK. How can they help you? How can they help the Alex Rocha Youth Center continue and, let's say, protect the lives at risk children in San Francisco, Cartagena?
Yes. Well, one way to for people to help is definitely if the people want to volunteer physically and be here at the youth center, they can come and volunteer for an hour or two. No problem. I mean, they know art or music or sports or mathematics, science, whatever they can, you know, volunteer with here in this in the community. They are welcome in, at the youth center. Also, you know, monetary donations, they are also welcome. We don't have a site right now where they can donate online, but definitely Western Union is one of the easiest way right now because, you know, we don't have an online, you know, device to get donations, monetary donations, but Western Union. And of course, you know, our bank account, you know, the Youth Center bank account, you know, that's, but, you know, we can also get, you know, supplies from people, right? This community needs clothing, shoes. A lot of kids don't have shoes. You know what I mean? You know, so clothing, even used clothing, no problem. You know what I mean? Yeah. As long as they look good, we can always wash them and share, you know, with the community. So a lot of the kids don't wear shoes. So shoes, you know, also dental supplies, definitely, you know, personal care products, you know, they can send it to us, you know, to the mail. You know, we can definitely... Yeah. Yeah,
definitely. Well, yeah. I will put up, I will obviously share the Facebook page, your youth center's Facebook page on our Facebook page. And of course, look up the Instagram and share that too. So people can get in touch with you directly. Clothes donations, you heard it. Shoe donations, very important. Food is needed right now during this pandemic because we keep people at work informally, mainly in this area. So there's been no work, no incomes, no way of buying food. So the situation, you know, hard ordinarily, it's twice as hard now with the pandemic. Definitely. So Alex, let me say thank you for your time, and you know, it's a wonderful thing that you're doing. Hopefully we can come out on the other side and continue to work and you can continue to work and help you know, the people of your barrio of San Francisco.
Thank you very much, Richard. We're really happy to be here, and we hope that we can continue doing this work with the community and do more for people to bring a relief to this humanity. People are hurting out there, and we want to do what we can. Thank you.
This is true. You're most welcome. I've been talking to Alex Rocha of the Alex Rocha Youth Center in Barrio San Francisco, Cartagena. You've heard the needs. You've heard what's going on there. On the links on the website, on our Facebook page, will all be there. You can get in touch with Alex. Very accessible. He will answer. He will tell you what's needed. If you need come to Cartagena and you want to volunteer in the future, there's an option for you there. I'm going to sign off now. This has been Columbia Calling, episode 333, reporting in from Bogota with Alex Rocha in San Francisco, Cartagena. It's been a fantastically interesting, if a bit troubling episode, but of course there is a ray of hope in the people like Alex working for the community. So thank you all for listening, and we'll be back next week with another podcast talking about Colombia. Bye-bye.